Okay, go ahead and call the meeting of Senate Transportation Committee to order for March 25th at 1:30. Introduction of staff, first staff to Senate Transportation, Dana Owen, Secretary Ann Cricklberg, and our teleconference operator today is Claire Gross. And we thank you for helping the committee out. We have four items on the agenda today. I'm not positive we'll get to all four, but we have Senate Bill 211, State Land Materials, has no further referral, but it's our intention to hold the bill to the next meeting. Senate Bill 94, Rights of Way, has a further referral to Judiciary, and the sponsor has suggested that we hold this bill as well to the next meeting. And then Senate Bill 197, Naturally Occurring Asbestos, has no further referral, and the sponsor has requested that we hold this bill. And then if we have time remaining, we will hear HDR 10, the Constitutional Amendment Transportation Fund, has a further referral to finance, and Representative Wilson is the sponsor, and her staffer, Becky Rooney, understands that we may be having to delay, well, I know we're going to delay public testimony, but we may be having to delay the bill. First off, Senate Bill 211 and State Land and Materials. We did have an objection to the bill. I'll remove my objection and have Dana Owen, staff to Senate Transportation, present an amendment. We'll do it first so we all know what the amendment is. Thank you, Mr. Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dana Owen, staff to the Senate Transportation Committee. The Department of Transportation approached us with some language changes to Section 16 of the bill. The amendment should be on your desks before you. The attempt, I believe, in this amendment is to clarify some misunderstandings and confusion that arose when we discussed Section 16 of the bill previously. This amendment would also bring the bill into alignment with the House companion bill, which passed out of House Transportation recently. And in order to explain to you more about the legal reasoning behind it, I'd like to bring Sean Lynch from the Department of Law up.
Mr. Lynch, welcome, and name for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Good afternoon. Senator Sean Lynch with Department of Law. And Dana just walked away with the amendment. But the amendment will conform the language of the of SB 211 to HB 371, the CS that has passed transportation, House Transportation. What the amendment does is it clarifies, there was a clarification from public comments. There was a comment that was concerned that the Section 16 could be read as a directive to the Commissioner of DNR to issue any remaining submerged land easements under the reciprocal easement agreement with the Forest Service. The section was rewritten. That was never the intent of the section. The section was rewritten to make clear that this gives the Commissioner of DNR the authority to remove the 55-year limitation from any easement, and that's all this Section 16 or the amendment and the amendment intend to do is allow the Commissioner of DNR discretion to remove 55-year limitations on the submerged land easements.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Questions for Mr. Lynch? Do I have a motion to move the amendment?
I move amendment.
Okay. One. Okay. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Amendment 1. Your objection?
All objections.
Senator French.
Discussion. Thank you. My only question is about a letter that was sent on the 13th of this month to the senator and the rest of the committee by the DOT and signed by Kim Rice, and it addresses whether Section 16 is unconstitutional. I think it was referring to the bill as it exists. And so I guess what I'm trying to make sure in the thrust of her letter is that this section's okay. That's the way I read it. And so I guess what I'm asking is having blessed Section 16 as it exists, why do we now need this change in the language? Can you help me out?
And before you answer, Mr. Lynch, I forgot Senator French, Senator Bishop, Vice Chair Senator Dyson, Senator Faircloth, and myself, Chair Senator Egan. Continue.
Thank you.
Forgot all about it. We were waiting until 1:30, and I spaced it out.
And Senator French, through the chair, the concern in public testimony was the verb grant. Did the easements I'm reading through it. The easements are granted to the United States Forest Service. What that first sentence in the existing bill did was it mirrored the federal law that authorizes the reciprocal exchange of easements. The comment from in public testimony was that by saying the easements are hereby granted, they're granted without public notice and comment, and that granting, that delivering of the easements, would violate the Constitution. And so the provision was rewritten to not have this mirror provision, to remove the verb grant.
Just to follow up,
Senator French.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just so I can simplify it so that I'm sure I understand, your position would be that it was fine the way it's written, but you're being more careful now in this amendment.
That is correct. I believe the effect, either way, is the DNR and the United States Forest Service have a memorandum of understanding, which is part of your committee packets, that lays out the process for delivering the easements. And the easements include compliance with the Alaska Lands Act review, DNR's Alaska Lands Act review, a public interest finding, and public notice before any easements are actually delivered. Had the bill passed and had this been enacted, would have still been full constitutional compliance. But to remove any doubt, we have taken the suggestion and modified the language.
The bill was good, but this is better.
That's correct.
Okay. Everyone looks happy. Or at least people I can see look happy, but maybe there's someone out there who is. Anyway, thank you. With that, I'll remove my objection to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator French. We do have someone online that is signed to testify. Julie Smith, or I'm sorry, first off, any further questions for Mr. Lynch? Great, thank you. And signed up to continue public testimony is Julie Smith from Fairbanks. Julie, are you online with Fairbanks LIO?
Hello, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Name for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Julie Smith. I live in Esther, Alaska. And I've addressed a letter to the Senate Transportation Committee and the House of Representatives Resources Committee. Honorable Senators and Representatives, this is the third letter I have written to you related to SB 211. The first letter raised several constitutional questions and provided a list of some practical implementation questions related to the bill. The second letter attempted to connect the dots of how the flow of money and management responsibility would change as a result of SB 211. In some ways, this letter is a follow-up to the most recent letter, as further reflection has helped me recognize that a good deal of the confusion related to SB 211 results from the lack of a fiscal note that details the impact this legislation would have on the budgets of DOT, DNR, and the State General Fund. But before I get to that question, I want to express to you the reason that I care enough about this bill to keep writing to you about it. I have many friends and colleagues who work at both DOT and DNR in Fairbanks. Over the years, both agencies have earned my respect and gratitude. I appreciate DOT for its can-do attitude and ability to provide needed infrastructure in Alaska. Every time I see DOT employees working road construction and every time I happen to notice a DOT vehicle driving down the road, I am grateful for the monumental work DOT accomplishes every day in creating and maintaining Alaska's transportation infrastructure. At the same time, I appreciate DNR's role in ensuring that the complex web of rights and responsibilities related to land use in Alaska is protected for the benefit of all Alaskans. In its role as land manager, DNR's mandate provides an expanded focus that looks beyond a current project and includes a wide range of multiple uses and environmental impacts. I am concerned that SB 211 would upset the existing balance between DOT and DNR in ways that would degrade the constitutional and environmental protections currently embedded in Alaska's land management system. I am especially concerned about the provisions that would diminish DNR's management role or transfer title and best control of material sites to DOT. These provisions are in sections 3, 5, 8, and 13. Well-managed material sites provide a multitude of benefits to Alaskans. Material sites that are not managed well can diminish private property values and cause significant economic and environmental harm. This is especially true in material sites located within rivers and floodplains. DNR plays an important role in identifying these issues and finding solutions that provide DOT with the gravel it needs to maintain Alaska's infrastructure while also protecting Alaska's land and resources for current and future generations. While I understand DOT's frustration with onerous levels of oversight, I am concerned that the pendulum is swinging too far in the opposite direction. In 2009, DOT acquired authority to conduct its own NEPA reviews for most of its federally funded projects. In 2011, the Alaska Coastal Management Program was dissolved, relieving DOT of significant state oversight of many material sites located in rivers and floodplains. Now DOT is attempting to diminish or eliminate DNR's management role. And this is happening in the wake of significant statutory changes in 2012 that were specifically designed to streamline material sales in Alaska. Given these recent changes that reduce the role of other agencies in DOT projects, it seems to me that SB 211 goes too far. These are the reasons I keep writing to you about SB 211, but I also have concerns about the bill itself. I've already expressed many of these concerns in my first two letters. As I spent time thinking about the bill and wrestling with the impact it will have, I realized that one reason it's so difficult to understand is because the presentation of the bill has not included an accounting of the fiscal changes that will result to DOT, DNR, and also the State General Fund as a result of this bill. For example, Sections 3, 5, and 8 of the bill require surveys and title transfers of the hundreds of parcels of state land involved in airports, highways, public facilities, and material sites included in the bill. What is the expected cost for obtaining these surveys and conveyances of title? And perhaps more importantly, Section 13 changes the fiscal management of material sales in Alaska, so that DNR would no longer charge DOT or DOT contractors for material. How much money is involved? Where will the money go that is no longer paid to DNR? Will DOT simply keep these funds in its own budget? And if so, is DOT required to provide an accounting of how SB 211 shifts funding from DNR and the State General Fund to DOT? And if there's some other fiscal impact that will result from the shift, what is it? What is the fiscal impact of SB 211? AS 2408035 states that fiscal notes attached to bills must include, among other things, the fiscal impact on existing programs and a line item detail of those impacts, This is not optional. It's required. In my research related to this bill, I have attempted to glean an understanding of the fiscal impact of SB 211 and have been unable to do so because the fiscal notes attached to the bill indicate there will be no fiscal impact. I therefore respectfully request that the bill be referred to the Legislative Finance Division for a fiscal analysis. I also request an opportunity to provide public comment to the bill after that analysis has been completed, and therefore request that the committee hold the bill until such time as that opportunity becomes available.
Great. Thank you. Lisa, can you summarize, please? Or Julie? I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Just if you can summarize, please. We have more people that want to testify.
Just saying I thank you for your time and appreciate your attention to this matter. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. And Senator French, question.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. And I've read both your letters. They're both well written. My question is, it seemed as if you were referring to a third letter you may have sent us just today. I have one from you dated the 17th of March and the 18th of March. Is there another one besides that?
To the senator through the chair, I have just read you my third letter, and I will send that to you later today.
I understand. Okay, thanks so much.
For the questions of Ms. Smith. Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Smith, for testifying. We do have people in the gallery signed up to testify. We have John Bennett from DOT. John, are you just available for questions, or would you like to testify?
Yes, we are both available for questions, and we do have a little bit of a presentation.
Come on up. Kim, you were on the list. Kim is right. Mr. Bennett, welcome back. And Mr. Lynch, welcome back again to the committee. And sorry, Kim, that I didn't have you on the list, but you're more than welcome to testify for departments. And state your name for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
My name is Kim Rice, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner at DOT, and this is?
I'm John Bennett, Northern Region Right-of-Way Chief.
And Sean Lynch with Department of Law.
And so we've noticed a lot of questions kind of fall down into certain categories, and we just wanted to step back a little bit and remind people why we're doing the bill. And the purpose is to clarify, streamline, and remove duplicate processes. The streamlining would be through project delivery, and we wanted to improve disposal processes in order to reduce the bureaucracy in the development of transportation projects. And most of the comments, as I said, the primary purpose is overlapping authorities. People are mentioning a lot that land management goes to DNR and resource management, which is true. Transportation management also goes to DOT, which is also true. But we have a great deal of overlap because, of course, transportation creates access to lands, and we use land to develop transportation projects. So what we've done is we've broken this down. I think I'm going to do a little bit on public process and how transportation projects are and what the public process is, because there's a great deal of confusion as to how this bill affects public process in general. And then John Bennett will talk about land disposals and how this bill is written to and how that will be. And then Sean Lynch will discuss material sites. So public process and project delivery. It is true we are very project focused. That's where the department focuses their attention. Land management department resources looks at the broader picture of, you know, massive pieces of land. We're very focused. When we do a project, despite popular opinion, even on state-funded projects, we do NEPA. NEPA ends up being required on every project because it's hard to miss every possible impacted resources along the way if you're doing anything more than a repave job. When we do repave jobs, we do things like a checklist, which tells us which resources we might hit and what we need to consider. So that happens with every project. In your packets, we developed a little spreadsheet that, or a flowchart that shows you these are federally highway projects. The difference between a federal highway project and perhaps a state-funded project is we can do NEPA in conjunction with design, whereas with highway projects, we do it in a more linear fashion. But all of those impacts are looked at and addressed. When we developed this chart, which is in your packet, you'll notice little orange clouds. Everywhere there's a little orange cloud on that chart is the time for public notice and public input on the project and what resources we're impacting. So not including, and it does not address or look at what happens to get an infrastructure project in place. In other words, when a community decides they need a project or they're looking for funding or they come to the legislature, that's not a part of this flow chart. So first we do the STIP process. State-funded projects are included in the State Transportation Improvement Program. They're shown. And they're shown in order for when the federal government approves our STIP, they know where funding is coming for all the projects. It's how we sort of balance the books for capital projects. So there's a public notice process for that. There's public input for the community. And when we finally get to the STIP and it identifies specific projects and specific funding, you get down to the environmental and preliminary design phase. It's at that phase, once we've initiated the project that's in the program, that we go out and we just scope the project with all of the resource agencies. And you'll notice on the side at the bottom of the chart, and an appended is a list of even more explanation, is all of the agencies that we contact in a process of doing the project and looking for scoping comments. It's how we determine when we do a checklist if there really is scoping, there's potential resource issues. And that includes the communities, it includes community councils. It really just depends on what comes back as to where we go from there on a project. So we go through the entire analysis as creating alternatives. And the alternatives could be anything from a spaghetti map of alternatives to a single alternative that only addresses the problem as it's been defined. At the end of that process, we publish the environmental document. And that's pretty much what we call the location approval of a project. That's where we know which corridor we're going to be on when we start to design the project. And that is put out for public notice and public review. So again, once you've identified where the location is, you're going to know what your impacts are. During that time, we are proposing, we already do, but we will start making a bigger emphasis on talking to Division Mine, Land and Water to make sure that any applications for land use that are open land that we're picking that we might be going across are included through that NEPA process, because it's really too late when you get to the end of a project to discover there's another alternate use suggested. Then we go to final design. During that time, we also have a...
So final design, this means you're near the end?
We finally know what our footprint generally is going to be.
I mean your testimony.
Yeah, I'm almost to the end. And we go to local government, get local government approval. That, in the historical process, has been when we have gone to Division Mining for the right-of-way acquisition through Division Mining, Land and Water. At that point, in our opinion, it's really too late to start over and go through the whole process again to have a new land selected, which is why we're proposing this bill and asking that the legislature consider us doing this earlier in the process. There you go.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Rice. Questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I'll have questions later. We're in the middle of public hearing, right. I hope we have a chance to talk to the department later.
Yes, and I apologize, but we did have one person in the gallery that wanted to testify on behalf of herself. So after the departments are done, we will call on Lisa Weisler next. So, Mr. Bennett.
Yes, I'd like, for the record, John Bennett. I'd like to follow up a little bit more on our proposal to modify the disposal language across all three of our authorities for aviation, highways, and public facilities. This we've had recurring problems with our disposal existing language that we're hoping to resolve. One of the big issues that we're trying to resolve, I believe we put a graphic in your packet that related to a problem we had on the Glen Highway with the Eureka Lodge. DOT manages a highway easement in front of the lodge. Our authority extends only to the vacation or release of that highway easement. DNR owns the underlying fee estate. In this particular situation, the adjoining owner has encroached in the right-of-way, and he needs to resolve that problem because he can't operate without the sewage lagoons that he's built in the right-of-way, and he can't sell his operation. So we've decided we could vacate a small amount that would solve his problem. But by vacating the easement, all that would happen is that it would become DNR's problem. They looked at it, they couldn't solve it because it didn't meet the requirements for a preference right sale. So this modified language, we would be able to solve his problem by virtue of the fact that sections 1, 6, and 9 would vest fee title to the surface estate for our existing highway facilities in DOT. So that would give us authority to convey fee estate. And also in sections 2, 4, and 10, which relate to the disposal language, that would basically allow us to convey title to the private party without having to reconvey it back to DNR. So that would be one solution that we could use time and time again as it seemed appropriate. The other significant problem we've had really started with language in Title 35 relating to public facilities. And in this language, it says when we've acquired a piece of property and then we've determined that it's no longer necessary, it's excess to our needs, we can dispose of it, but title reverts to the persons, heirs, or successors in whom it was vested at the time of taking. Now, that may sound like a very good idea, but what happens is, and the case is borne out in a case in Fort Yukon where we acquired a parcel of land, the entire parcel of land, to build some trooper housing. Troopers moved out, the use had changed, it was really no longer necessary, and the community wanted to acquire that land. Well, because of this restriction, we had no mechanism by which to convey it to the community. And the original owners were no longer anywhere to be found. So that kind of a restriction prevents resolution, and it can create some other unintended consequences depending on how the land was acquired. If we acquired a strip versus a total parcel and such, we want to make sure that we don't end up in a situation whereby we could end up in a situation where we could landlock someone. We have to look at that very closely. So we believe this modified uniform language will go a long way to solve our problems and solve the problems of the adjoining property owners.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Mr. Lynch.
And Sean Lynch, Department of Law. And I'm just going to address real quickly the Section 13 and what we're trying to, this is the materials. It's an exemption to the Lasso Lands Act for DOT's use of materials owned by the state. And so just real quickly, we've all seen road construction, you cut from the high points, you fill into the low points. If there's additional fill that's needed for the low points, you open a material site and you borrow material and bring it in. When you're done with the road construction, when DOT's done with the road construction, they have an open rock face, and that is the material source or site under DNR statute. Because DOT lands are owned by the state, material sources owned by the state, DNR has authority, in fact, DNR statute directs them to issue material sales contracts for use of materials and sources owned by the state, which is DOT. So when DOT goes to either maintain their roads or reconstruct their roads and DOT needs to get back into their pits, the DOT's first step is to go into DNR under the Alaska Lands Act, their Alaska Lands Act authority, for a material sales contract. And just as if it was another third party, another public entity, another developer. This provision is an exception. It's located in 38.05.030, which are the exemptions to the Alaska Lands Act. DOT already has an exemption for its acquisitions and disposals, which is in Section B. This creates a new Section D that just exempts the DOT from the material sales requirements.
Questions for Mr. Lynch or the department?
I'd like to afterwards.
Okay, afterwards, right. And again, thank you for providing your testimony. Again, I apologize on behalf of myself. I thought it was all department personnel that were available to answer questions, and I missed Lisa Weisler representing herself. Lisa, welcome. Provide your name for the record, please. Provide your testimony.
I am Lisa Weisler.
And I apologize.
It's okay. Lisa Weisler from Juneau, and I am here on my own. I am a former state attorney. I keep an eye on some things out of interest, and this one sort of jumped out at me as maybe having some issues that were worth bringing to your attention. I feel like I understand what DOT is trying to do. I feel like the bill itself is written in a way that raises many questions and that may ultimately cause issues later, and some of these are constitutional questions that perhaps in context with other laws it all works out, but you can't tell that from this law. And again, I feel like perhaps the legislation itself is written so very broadly to solve some very specific problems as they've identified, as DOT has identified, that maybe there's a better way to go about this. And I have provided some written comments. I'll just very quickly go through the constitutional issues that I see. And this has to do with, well, 2 points. One is this, the disposal. It's a state land that goes to DOT, still state land, and that they will use under current law, and this is a law that's been on the books for a long time, when they no longer need a part of it, it goes back to DNR. And in this way, DNR can manage it and dispose of it as it should be under the Alaska Lands Act. And, of course, the Alaska Lands Act implements Article 8 of our Constitution. So, you know, you kind of keep everything in place there. And the SB 211 now will change this to where DOT may transfer the land back to DNR. They don't have to, but they may. And it takes out, in terms of the exception, where the land shall be returned. Well, like I said, yeah, they have to return it. Or now they have the option of whether or not to return it. And DNR, under the Lands Act, they have the legislation that's needed to implement the Constitution. Article 8, Section 9, where the legislature may provide for the sale or grant of state land and establish sales procedures, they have the laws in place for implementing and disposing of land in compliance with the Constitution. Now, DOT, when they get this land from the state that they no longer have to return back to DNR, when they dispose of it, they do it under terms and conditions established by the commissioner. So that's not establishing, that's not a law, that's just things, whatever the terms and commissioner, the terms that the commissioner comes up with. So I think that really the legislature still has their duty to have statutes that provide for the sale of land, of state land. Now, DOT right now, they have authority for private land, real property, but not necessarily the state land that's been transferred from DNR. And the other issue is multiple use, and that is something, again, that's in our Constitution, where there is if you look at all of Article 8, there's a multiple use doctrine. And this is what DNR does. They manage state lands for multiple use. And it was kind of disturbed by a response from DOT to public comments asking about material sites and whether they would be managed for public use. And DOT's response was no, they wouldn't, because that land use for government purposes is not included in the public domain. And there is a, under the Constitution, in Article 8, Section 6, does talk about lands and interests not used or intended exclusively for governmental purposes constitute the public domain. The public domain is land that the state's not using for something else that can be settled. So I don't think that gets DOT out of the constitutional doctrine for managing for multiple use. So those are some of the broad constitutional questions. And the other questions I had just in the drafting of the legislation, sections 1, 6, and 9 that talk about DOT having the primary management authority over state lands, the state of, or the surface estate. Sounds like you read it and kind of get the DNR still has the permitting authority, but DOT can condition that permitting authority. And I read that and go, I don't know what that means. I don't know when DOT is going to condition it. I don't know how they're going to, how the public will know. How does that affect DNR's permitting authority? So, you know, when legislation raises that many questions, it might be good for it to go back to the drawing board so that, you know, in a year, 5 years from now, someone picking up the statute knows what it means and doesn't have to go back to the record to try to figure it out. That's what I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Weisler. Questions for Ms. Weisler? Seeing none, thank you. It's good to see you again.
You.
And we do have, do we have anyone else in the audience that would like to testify, public testimony? Mr. Bitney, come forward, please. And who you represent, your name for the record, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is John Bitney, and I'm employed as the state government liaison for the Office of Mayor of the North Slope Borough. And I would just appreciate a chance to point out on the record that a letter was provided to your office and to the committee expressing concerns. Listening to the testimony today has helped get a better understanding of some of the questions and concerns that were raised in regard to various sections of the bills related to the disposals and the land use processes and those sorts of things. But I appreciate the chance to put on the record that we were very concerned about Section 15. The properties that are in Section 15 that are being transferred from DNR over to the Department of Transportation have been the subject of municipal entitlement selections for approximately two decades, and we have had a good working relationship in terms of, granted, a long period of time, but as recently as just a few weeks ago, meeting with the Department of Natural Resources staff on that process. And so the fact that it showed up in this bill came as a surprise, and there isn't any descriptions in the bill about the details. We, from the backup, see that there were some aerial photographs that seemed to encompass all the property at those locations, and it seems to overlap with the selections that we've made. And so the letter does request removal of the section, and I appreciate the chance to put that on the record and make myself available to committee if there's
great,
anything I can help with.
And I'm assuming that's Franklin Bluffs and Happy Valley?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bitney? See, no, thanks, John, for coming forward and providing testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify? See, none. Public testimony closed. Questions from the committee for the departments?
Mr.
Chair. We do have Ed Fogles from DNR here and also Lynn Menifee from DNR available to answer questions. Senator French.
I think we're thinking the same thing, which is, can we hear from the department about what we just heard? Can we hear a response?
From DNR or DOT? Either one.
Well, let's go DOT since they're the ones. I mean, let's start with Section 15 and kind of then work back to Ms. Weisler's comments. Thank you.
You know the drill.
For the record, John Bennett, DOT. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Section 15 is the section whereby DOT requests that DNR transfer Franklin Bluffs and Happy Valley airports. And as Mr. Bitney stated, we have had our applications in for 20 years. I believe the selections have been at least that long. And so there is a competing interest there. I believe in our previous testimony before the Senate, we stated that we believe these are very important sites for to be retained in state ownership and public use in anticipation of increased resource development and increased maintenance needs along the Dalton Highway. And so we stand by that position, and we believe that those lands are best suited to be retained by the state of Alaska.
Senator French,
maybe you could just describe for us the your view of the North Slopes. I mean, it sounds like from Mr. Bitney's testimony, you're both asking for the same land. He said the maps were overlapping. That's what I took that to mean. So maybe you can just walk me through the history of this? I mean, how big of a dispute am I settling by handing the land to you? And I'm sure there may be other questions, but that's my question.
Through the chair, Senator French, we have some graphic overlays that we looked at, one which would show what the lands that had been selected by the North Slope Borough, and then we had an outline of what lands we believe was appropriate to be retained for both.
That was in our packet?
Yes, I believe it was.
Yeah, I've still got that.
And we believe that, and that showed the area that would be appropriate to accommodate the airstrip, a building site for a maintenance station or other uses there. And I think I estimated visually that there remained between 30% and 50% of the original selected area that we would not be requesting. I believe that all of our selections for Happy Valley and Franklin Bluffs would have been east of the Dalton Highway, and there still would be remaining selection area. So, yes, there still would be some remaining area for the North Slope Borough.
Thank you.
Hey, Senator French, Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those same lines, if you could just explain the process. The federal government allocated so much property for Alaska. So is that in our land ownership now? Is it in the state's column, or is there a process specifically to resolve claims to the property under other allotments? I'm coming from the NALA, in the North Anchorage Land Agreement, where we have to work in conjunction with that between the state, the municipality, and the Iklutna Corporation to try to resolve land use when land disposals become available. So what's the process for the state if it's in the state's bank right now and there are others that are wanting that allotment? Is it really it's our decision that we have to decide whether it's a priority for the state versus the community, or what does that process look like?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, I'm not the best person to speak to that. We may want to bring up the DNR representatives. I do know that these are currently state-owned lands. The actual municipal entitlement selection process, I really can't speak to, but I think it's pretty important to recognize it by virtue of the fact that it's been in process for 20 years, that there are some apparently insurmountable issues that may require legislative action.
Mr. Chairman, there's a process. I just want to know what the process is. If it's action by this committee, we have a North Slope Borough that's asking us not to do it, and it will inevitably be our responsibility in choosing the property owner, it sounds like. But I'd like to know if there was a process that we went through and if we're at a stalemate where the legislature just has to decide.
And Mr. Fogles, you will be granted the opportunity to comment on this. Senator Bishop?
Yes, along Senator Faircloth's line of questioning, I'd just like to also get a nod, if I can, from Mr. Bitney in the back of the room. It appears that Section 13 was also of some concern to the North Slope Borough.
And Mr. Bitney nodded in the affirmative.
So I would, I'd be good to hear from DNR and DOT both on that Section 13.
Okay. Further comment, Mr. Bennett, before we call the Deputy Commissioner of DNR forward.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Sir Faircloth.
Mr. Chairman, I have a whole bunch of questions, but it's going to require both at the table somehow, or we're just going to go back and forth as far as the conversation
we'll get rid of the,
goes.
We'll get rid of the attorney then.
No.
Well, we've got the North Slope Borough, right, then we've got land disposal, and then we've got individual questions on the bill.
Ms. Smith's letters. Mr. Menifee, Mr. Fogles, welcome to the table. And you know the drill. Name for the record, please.
Yeah.
And Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner, the Department of Natural Resources. I also have Wynn Menifee, Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and he's the real expert here. I'll take a stab at least the municipal entitlement process question, and Wynn may have to back me up here and give you a little more detail.
Mr. Chairman, I don't need to steps on the municipal. I want to know the state process. The land is in our ownership, yes or no, and then the process that others go to if they're laying claim to that property What process do you go through to execute ownership?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair. So the North Slope Borough has submitted their selections to the state. They're entitled to a certain amount of acreage, and they've submitted their selections, and we're in the process of adjudicating those selections. It's a long process. There's a pretty complicated history with the North Slope Borough's municipal entitlement process. But so we are in the process of adjudicating their selections, and at some point in time, say if this bill weren't before you, we would be adjudicating those two parcels as an administrative action, and it would be up to the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources to determine whether to convey those two parcels to the North Slope Borough or not.
Senator Fairclough.
Very frankly, what are we fighting over? Is it mineral? Is there subsurface rights that go along with the allocation? So there's not, I see a no.
No, Senator Fairclough, through the chair, no, the subsurface estate is not transferred over. Right now, the complication, to my understanding, has pretty much been that these two sites, there are a lot of existing uses on those two sites, and there's some fairly significant contamination issues. So we're trying to unravel those. Those have been two issues I know that have led us to where we haven't adjudicated these yet.
Sarah Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So whose contamination is it?
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, my name is Wynn Menefee, Chief Operations for Division of Mine, Land, and Water. If I understand correctly, there's contamination on part of the site, and I think it's at Happy Valley. But I can't actually speak on the record to who contaminated it right at this point. But the just for clarification, I think you did ask, is it in state ownership? Yes, both areas are in state ownership. That's already been dealt with. We've got it from the feds. Really, when you say what is the issue at hand, the question is through our normal process, we would decide whether to convey the land to the municipal, the borough, because of their municipal entitlement selection, and we would consider other uses or other demands on the site, including DOTs, in that decision process. What this bill presents before you is whether DOT should get the lands without going through that decision process. And what the issues of the use are, there's an airstrip and there's gravel material. Material is part of the surface estate. So the material is at hand because DOT uses the material, and they usually manage airstrips, and they also, at the airstrips, can manage the incidental other permits that we have on the land for commercial guide facilities there and some things like that.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has the properties been surveyed so that it is available for conveyance, or... And if you can answer that question, then of the land that has been requested from the North Slope Borough, how much of that land has been conveyed?
Senator, through the chair, the land, as I understand it, has not been surveyed. The land, when it goes to DOT, there's, if I remember from the bill, I'm trying to think of whether it actually requires a survey. Some aspects require surveys and some don't. Let me check Section 15. This doesn't actually require a survey in the conveyance to DOT. It's an identified parcel. It doesn't actually describe it in the bill what the size is, but at some point we would figure that out, and that would have to transfer to DOT.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Winfrey, do we believe that the North Slope Borough is only asserting a claim on this property or a desire to have this property because of the gravel assets that are there, that's of value, or do we know? It sounded like, at least in the letter, that the borough is somewhat surprised that this is on the table and that the department hasn't contacted them to tell them, at least with a courtesy phone call, that you were going to assert before the legislature that these parcels were off the table.
Senator Fairclough, through the chair, I'll take a stab at that. I mean, I think that The intent of the municipal entitlement program is to convey lands to municipalities so they can get an economic benefit to sustain their municipalities. And I think that it might be better just to ask the North Slope Borough themselves, but I think they see these two parcels as they are clearly important parcels of land, and they see these as potential economic generators to the borough at some point in the future. As to why we haven't given them a courtesy phone call at this point, probably our mistake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, since those are former pipeline construction camps, I can't believe they weren't surveyed. Mr. Bennett.
Mr. Chairman, John Bennett, DOT. And more than likely, virtually everything was surveyed back in the day. But our definition of the sites that we would like transferred from DNR to DOT, that would be surveyed once we had a funded project and received the conveyance. We have an intent to construct a maintenance station at Franklin Bluffs. That's one of our more immediate needs. And so that would follow suit.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Senator Dyson.
Yeah. This job is a fascinating one. Some wise man said to me, the proverb is things are seldom what they seem. And this job, they're almost never what they seem. But when you guys first showed up, I asked one of you, who's going to be against this? I don't know. And I said, intuitively, I'll bet people will think of DNR as the steward of the land and DOT as the utilizer, and the one that tears it up and builds things. And lo and behold, that's what all the testimony has been about. And anyways, that felt a little disingenuous at the time. But I can also see the huge frustration. For the state owns the land, and one of them, DOT, has an immediate purpose and need for it, and why have to jump through all these hoops, to transfer the title from one desk to another, and right when you've got a short business building season and things need to happen, and here are all these things. And I think what you're asking us to do is eliminate some of those barriers so that those things can happen. What I hear from what I read and what I've heard is, but you're taking away a bunch of the protections. For most of us, transferring land before it's surveyed is a very startling concept. I realize in most of this area, it probably doesn't make any difference. But and then the idea that DNR has to go through a public hearing process and so on and so forth, the disposal of land to anybody else except the next desk over, like, when it goes from DNR. So people are worried that whatever protection there was from the land from a public hearing process and other things has gone away. Now, did I hear you all say, maybe you did, that DOT will have to go through some process, NEPA or something like that? And so then would the public concern about the ultimate disposition of the land be assuaged by the fact that there's a rigorous process that has to be gone through? This is rigorous, nearly as rigorous for DOT as it would have been for DNR, so that the public interest from an environmental perspective is protected. And then if we do this, and you probably said all this, and forgive me for having not retained at all, but indeed, is there any public process for this transfer from DNR to DOT? And I'm thinking particularly not only from North Slope Borough has some selections there, but other folks that think they have a property interest that might be compromised, if you will. And or traditional users or whatever, that they would perceive at least that their rights were diminished.
Take a shot.
that. And I would like to suggest that, yes, by virtue of our project development process and...
I'm sorry, if you can give your name again, Mr. Bennett.
John Bennett, DOT. Through our project development process and the environmental reviews that we go through, that the process that we would go through to acquire a new piece of land from DNR for a right-of-way or public facility is far more extensive than possibly what DNR already goes through. In the sense of the acquisition of land sections where we acquire land from DNR, what is lost now is that DNR won't go through a decision-making process and public notice that they are, in fact, turning this land over to DOT. But this bill adds another public notice process that wasn't in the mix before. And so, if, from my point of view, we have no net loss on the public involvement process, and of course our project development requirements for public notice and public involvement is very extensive. So we believe that the public's our ability to convey information to the public, make sure they are well noticed and have their interests protected, is going to be well met.
Mr. Chairman,
before Mr. Fogles or Mr. Menefee, would you like to comment on Mr. Bennett's comments before we go to Senator Bishop?
Mr. Chair, Ed Fogles, DNR. I mean, yeah, that's the way the bill is laid out right now. When DOT will, I mean, they have their own process for their own projects, which I think they've explained that to you with a lot of public input. And then, so that lays a public process foundation for them. And then in future projects under some of the sections in that bill, they would see lands that they would need from DNR for public highway or airport or facility purposes. They would request those lands from DNR, and then there would be a public notice for those. So I think that, I mean, that piece is there. I think we understand the public notice and participation process of their large projects, and that's pretty well laid out in that flowchart, I think, that that DOT gave to the committee.
Great, thank you. Senator Bishop.
Oh, I got a comment and just and a question on Section 13. I think to Mr. Bennett's analogy there, Section 3 talks about that public notification on transfer of lands from one department to the next, the public process. But I want to go back to Section 13 because it talks to borrow pits, something that I know something about. As I used to build roads for a living, and just in general, so I want to frame the discussion kind of like where Senator Dyson was going, because he did such a great job of kind of bringing us back to focus here. But this bill, tell me yes or no, we're kind of drilling down into rights of way, right, for DOT specifically, right? And these borrow pits would fall within the right-of-way jurisdiction for highway construction?
Senator Bishop, yeah. Chair Shaman, Department of Law, and the borrow pits are not always located in the right-of-way. So the borrow pits are...
But close proximity to the project.
Especially particularly the borrow pits that DOT utilizes. There, I'm sure the DNR has in their inventory remote borrow pits, DOT's borrow pits are near to their transportation facilities.
Okay, so with that being said, so if this bill was to become law as it's written, no money's going to change hands on the materials.
Senator Bishop, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Let's say in the advent of a new pipeline construction and a completely new right-of-way, pipeline right-of-way, how would DNR, would they still be in control of a new borrow pit for a pipeline contractor and make those sales and bids and terms and conditions?
Senator, this is Wynn Menefee, through the chair. The bill does not remove DNR's ability to do material site designations and material sale contracts. And so we still have the option, whether it be for a pipeline project or a private individual that wants to go out and get material from state land, we can still authorize that. We can, in fact, even when DOT requests the title to be conveyed over for a material site, we will still have the capability of doing a third-party contract out of that pit, even though DOT has a fee simple ownership of the surface estate. The aspect is we could still do a third-party sale as long as DOT concurs with that. And if they say they need all the material, we wouldn't be doing it. If they say, sure, we have some excess here that you could use, then we could do the third-party sale.
Just one more follow-up, Mr. Sure. And then I'll be quiet. Just because this is good for the public to hear this on these gravel sales. So you said third-party. So DOT's designated the pit. They've used 50,000 cubic yards out of that pit for that project. ABC Construction comes in and says, I need 10,000 yards. Unrelated to the project, DNR can make that sale, and the money can go to DNR,
Senator,
provided the two concur.
Senator, through the chair, yes, if DOT says it's okay.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say if is because they may be through the project, but they may be thinking long term and say, we want to keep the material for future uses, and so it really is up to the concurrence of DOT.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Fairclough.
So we had testimony, thank you, Mr. Chairman, we had testimony earlier that talked about that. How will that be allocated if DOT chooses to keep the money? Then more money is just going into DOT. If you have third-party sales, how would we keep track of that money? And I guess the second fold question is the purpose of this to try to lower costs of projects and the accounting for projects? So I go to the rehab on the Glen Highway or adding a third lane and all of the gravel that would be needed, and we're going to have to we'd have to make a pit available close, and then the state actually increases the cost of the overall project for project materials. So talk to me about how or if this actually can reduce costs for projects and accounting as we try to implement some of these transportation improvements.
Through the chair, Senator from Faircloth, this is John Bennett, DOT. And currently, DOT has no authority to sell materials to third parties. This bill grants us no authorities to sell materials to third parties. So there will be no income generated, no revenue coming into the department as a result of this bill. Will it result in savings? Well, I believe it will be, because less money will be transferred to DOT for state-owned material that those highway funds, airport funds, whatever they are, will then be able to be allocated for more projects.
Follow-up, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we've got Senator Bishop on in the edge of his chair, too, because we thought we just heard that money that third party could be sold. So I think you've taken us full circle now. But before we go back to that part of this conversation, what the question that has arisen is, I understand about just moving dirt around and the cost associated with moving that dirt and then having our contractors buy that dirt and then having them have whatever margin that they might put on it to sell back to us as part of the project. So I can see cost savings there in providing our own gravel to reduce the overall cost. But it couldn't it also be said that if you have federal dollars in a project and you don't pay for that gravel with the federal dollar, then that DOT is losing money?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, I don't believe we're losing money. We just have more money available. We have a fixed appropriation for our projects. The question you had on the confusion we may have had over third-party sales is DOT does not have authority to sell to ABC Construction directly. We have no authority to sell, but DNR retains that authority to sell to ABC Construction, so they can receive revenue for selling that material.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, there are other people that want to comment at the table. I'd just like to hear how that, if it's sold, where does it go? Where is the money accounted for?
Rice.
Thank you, through the chair. This is Kim Rice, Department of Transportation. Deputy Commissioner. Anyway, I'm trying to remember what I'm supposed to say. So the bid on the project would end up being lower. The what happens is if we make available, we use a state pit and we make it available to a contractor to bid. He can go to a third-party pit or he can choose our pit. He would probably, most of the determination on that actually is the cost of haul, the cost of processing, all of those other things that are that associated with that bid price. But if we don't charge him the 50, if he chooses to use the state pit, and we're not charging him that 50 cents a yard, then he will not in turn bill us for the 50 cents. And what will happen then is you will get a lower bid cost, bid on that item between the contractors. And so in total, we would probably have a smaller or a reduced bid price, which would leave funding for other capital projects or other items in that project. No.
Further questions of the Deputy Commissioner? Senator Dyson, it looked like you were getting ready to.
Well, just that's very common for his owner supplied material. That reduce the cost.
Further comments from either DNR or DOT?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just take a. My name is Ed Fogles with DNR. I mean, again, right now we're required to charge DOT 50 cents a cubic yard for the gravel for state highway projects. With this bill, we won't have to do that, so there will be cheaper materials or free materials going into state roads, which should lower the cost of those road projects. It's and you know, we can't do that under current law right now.
But that 50 cents per yard works into your budget, right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. That's an administrative fee. That's far below the normal appraised fair market value we would charge anyone else, and that's to come back. And theoretically, some of that comes back as program receipts to help us pay for the cost of administering that program for DOT, which theoretically we then no longer have to do. So that's why it's a zero fiscal note for us, because we wouldn't have to administer that. We wouldn't get the money, but we would be nothing for us to administer at that point.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Dyson.
I suspect a ancillary concern here is the land gets transferred to DOT because DOT's building roads or airports or something in an area, and all the land is not needed for that. And I suspect some of us worry that it won't get reverted to our magnificent stewardship group, DNR, who looks after things like multiple use, public access, and all those sorts of things. And I suspect there's nothing in here that really forces DOT to go through that process. And if it would, it would be a long-term process anyways, because you can't foresee what might happen anyways. Do you guys talk a little bit about that?
Remember, this was a department-requested piece of legislation. And I just,
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I'm going to start that from a DNR perspective. I mean, I think Mr. Bennett gave an example early on about an issue that I'm pretty familiar with, and that's a piece of some sewage lagoons built on the Glen Highway that we desperately would like to get rid of, but our statutes won't allow it. They're within the right-of-way. Under this bill, this allows DOT, gives them the tools to be able to dispose of that to the owners of the sewage lagoons. So that's, I think, a classic example of where, under current law, DNR does not have the tools to do something like that. And I think there you'll find a lot of, small slivers here and there that are caused by highway realignments, highway projects, where, it's silly for DNR to go through some cumbersome second process to deal with those parcels. Why not let DOT just deal with those parcels as part of their highway project?
Mr. Lynch.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, if I can just follow up on your question about the acquisition of land or the creation of a new pit. Under current law, that would be a DNR authorization on a best interest of the state finding. Under the bill, sections 3, 5, and 8 have that it's a DOT determination. But it's the reasonably necessary for the project. And so what what we envision happening, when you're talking about a new, opening a new pit, it's with the project, the environmental documents are posted online, it's all open for the public to comment on. DOT makes its determination, basically an engineering determination, this is reasonably necessary for the project. And so in a large way, the documents that would be giving to DNR for that state best interest finding are much the same. In fact, I would imagine are identical to the documents they'd be posting online for their own best interest, or I'm sorry, their own reasonably necessary determination.
Senator Dyson, follow up.
I think I probably asked the question in or unartfully, but so when the barrel pit's closed, project's over, the land belongs to DOT, and at what point is there consideration for reverting the ownership to our trusted stewards at DNR for the future?
And I'll just answer this real quick on the DOT perspective, and then I'll hand it to DNR. But when you're talking about the borrow pit actually becoming open for public use, we have a DOT open pit. DNR and DOT would have to work together. DNR actually has a best interest determination that they would have to make under their Alaska Lands Act to put it on their list of available pits. And so the agencies, again, are working together. And I can let DNR tell you right. The process.
Still, I didn't answer the question very well. Everything is done. Nobody wants gravel. It's all over, you know, and there the land sits. At what point is there consideration giving it the title back to DNR?
Okay, Senator Dyson, just through the chair, when DOT says they no longer need the land, because they've exhausted the material or whatever, or they don't need the airstrip anymore, whatever it is, they say they no longer need it, they give notice that they know they no longer need it to DNR, and at that point the commissioner can request that it be transferred back, or we can determine that we don't either want it or don't need it, and we can make that determination. But the ultimate decision still rests with DOT per the bill, that they get to decide whether to disposal it on their own accord or give it back. So it's not a mandatory give back to DNR. It's an optional.
All right. So and I really appreciate you finally got at it. And I excuse my, is it inartful or unartful? Inartful, I think. So, but I can imagine some folks in the region, you know, who have a traditional use of it and so on, they would be quite a bit more comfortable. They say, okay, DOT's got a 4 or 5 year project here. At the end of all that, the area gets smoothed off and, you know, and is back to something like it was, only 10 or 12 feet lower and so on and so forth. So then it can go back to something like a use that was before for local people, snow machines, hunting, reindeer herding, or, you know, or private use strip or something, or for miners like Senator Bishop here, who's got a claim on a creek over there. So, yeah, so that's why the local folks who might have an interest but are mature enough to say, yeah, we want roads and stuff out here too, and we understand that. We'd really like to see it 10 years out or whatever. There's a reversion process. And please don't take my questions as pejorative. I'm really in favor of what you're trying to do, and I can see we're a huge asset to projects.
Okay, thank you, Senator Dyson. Just for information for those in the audience, we are not going to hear any more bills today. We're almost near the end of meeting time, so we don't want to get into especially Senate Bill 94 and not have enough time, so we will move Senate Bill 94-197 HGR 10 to the next committee meeting as soon as we have time. And Senator Faircloth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you talk to the committee and walk us through use, if we were to pass this bill and there was a conflicting municipal or local land use code, how would that be affected by the process that you're proposing?
Through the chair, Senator Faircloth, we do have authorities in place, such as in AS-35, it requires the department to comply with local government land use ordinances and deal with their planning and zoning. So we do have those requirements in place. We deal with them through the environmental process. We deal with them in specific permits, so they are included in our process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator, for the comments, for the questions of the committee. Seeing none, for wrap-up, either DOT or DNR, would you like to provide some final wrap-up comments? We're not going to move the bill today. We're going to hold it as amended, so it will come up again. But
Mr. Chairman,
I'd like to hear at least a wrap-up from DNR and a wrap-up from DOT.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. Ed Fogle's here from DNR again. I'll start the wrap-up, and then I'll turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Kim Rice. But you know, from our perspective, you know, I think I've appeared before a lot of you in various committees over the years, you know, on our efforts to improve and streamline and make our permitting process more efficient. You know, we've had a huge backlog in DNR, so we're continually looking for ways where things are inefficient in government, and so we're, you know, it's been a real focus over the last 3 years, and I think there are clearly issues here that need to be addressed, where we have duplicative bureaucracy that are working against each other at times, and I think that's what this bill is designed to do, is try and erase those. It's silly for one state agency to have material sale contracts with another and pay them back and forth. I think we can kind of figure out a better way to do business there, and I think that's what this bill is trying to do.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Fogles. Ms. Rice.
This is Kim Rice, through the chair. First of all, just thank you for listening to us and walking through this, because I think as you listen to us and ask the questions, we have been asking each other those questions for the last few months, and we've learned a lot through working together. I mean, I think if nothing else, working together to write this bill has been educational for us in trying to find ways that we can improve and streamline. We came to an agreement months ago after we sat down and went through this, and they said, you want to do what? And we said, this is what we think we need to do. And after walking through it, they agreed we need law to help us. And so that's why we're here. And we just appreciate your listening to us and working with us. And we really feel that there are improvements that this bill can bring to efficiency in government.
You know, thank you, Deputy Commissioner. We did have good comments, though, from folks on OffNet last week, and good comments today from Ms. Smith and Ms. Weisler. I mean, brought up good, and you know, hopefully you can meet before the next meeting with the folks of the North Slope Borough and try to resolve some of the questions and concerns that they had, because they were taken totally off guard when it was originally presented. So we appreciate you taking the time to come and testify before us, and you know, one of our staff will let you know when meeting number three is. Anything else to come before transportation? Meeting is adjourned.